Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, a show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a guest I'll be welcoming onto the show very shortly, we'll take a journey into the phantasmagorical world of movies. Today, we'll be cracking open some magical cinematic tomes to cast spells about fantasy movies twixt the light and the dark. Yes, this is a genre that spans the entire spectrum from cheerful, chortly little kid-friendly fantasies right through to the darkest, most disturbing, monster-ridden tales of our nightmares. Just a little later on, I'll be talking about some choice fantasies from the last century of filmmaking here on Earth. Yes, that's right, the filmography of Mars and Saturn-based filmmakers wasn't available to me at the time of writing. When are they going to finish building that long-range spaceship already? But anyway, before we get to all that, let me begin by introducing our guest for this week. Shirley Spiteri-Mintoff has a master's in fine arts specializing in digital arts and a 16-year career with the local media industry here in Malta. She's produced and directed both TV programs, commercials, and short films. Citing Tim Burton and Guillermo del Toro as her favorite directors, Shirley joins me here in the studio today. Welcome, Shirley.
Thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you here. Now, Shirley, let's start by talking about how your love for film was born. Do you remember the moment?
Well, I entered university not knowing what course I was going to take. But then, as I went into communications, I realized that my passion for the audiovisual was getting bigger and bigger, especially in the advertising world. Okay. As for film, I've always been a film lover from when I was a kid. I still remember the day my parents took me to the cinema to watch the films like The Neverending Story, for example. I remember that as if it was yesterday. About this genre, it fits in perfectly, and I remember that day as being I was awed. I was like really amazed by the visuals of that film. Okay, looking back, maybe it is old, but for that time, I mean, the graphics and the imagery was amazing.
It was, and we'll be talking about that a little later on. So, do you remember the feeling when you saw the film? What was the magic for you? Was it the music?
I still remember the smell of the cinema as well. I mean, it was such an amazing moment. I mean, that film, I've seen it like, I think, 10 times from that day on. It was the feel, I think, of that film. It was such a romanticized storytelling of this kid and his fantasy world, and then how that influences the world in real life. I think that film characterizes my start of love for the fantasy film.
That's awesome. That's a really good choice. And it's funny how smells sometimes stick with us and strange sensations that weren't really to do with the film itself. So you're involved in making short films yourself here in Malta, and they also seem to veer towards the fantasy genre in general. Is that right?
Yes. Apart from our commercial work, we tried to create short films also in collaboration with the Malta Film Fund, who helped support us.
Okay,
we did two short films, both period films. One was the first one, Friend or Foe, was based in the Second World War, while the second one, Alicia, was in the 1920s period. So they're both period films, making production quite heavier than a usual present day film, obviously. Short films is my passion.
Yep.
It also works as a training ground for making longer productions, which eventually we'd like to do. But it's also obviously strenuous on financials as well. So we try to do our best with what we have.
I can imagine. I mean, and talking about Alicia, your more recent short film, I mean, there are so many visual elements to the production. I mean, how did you bring the team together? You must have had artists from so many different areas that had to coordinate.
Yes. I think our film is like a cake. You have all the ingredients, and then you have to have trust in the people who are making those ingredients, and then how you mix them together, then it's up to the director. But you have to have a good team in front of you, and I think I've worked with one of the most amazing people and teams I could find, and they were on board on the idea and the feel of the film, with production design and styling being one of the most the main characteristics of the film, and we actually like really really pushed on those elements. Production design was mostly our area, like the team together, even the scriptwriter and Dimitrov. We did it like all together, like bringing stuff from wherever we could find, and also like using locations which already had those elements.
Right.
Like for example, Popeye Village.
Mm-hmm.
But then the styling, the clothes. I mean, yeah, we were working with really talented people. I would say.
And it sounds like from what you're saying, the ability to delegate and leave people to do their expert work is a big part of your job, really.
Yeah, you have to give direction, obviously. You have to show them like what you want to get out of this and where you want to go. But obviously, you have to give them leeway into getting their own creative elements out into the film, so that they feel it's their own as well as yours.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this: Do you remember on that production what the biggest challenge was? Was there a sort of an aspect of the experience that you remember as being particularly stressful or difficult, or was it a smooth? Perhaps it was a smooth production run.
Well, it wasn't smooth because we had, especially for example, the first short, Friend or Foe. We were a really, really small team. Like, we were like five people trying to do everything. So we were like filming until 3 a.m. and then going to the next location to set it up for the next morning, going back and sleep for 2-3 hours and wow, then go back to film. So, yeah, that was a lesson we learned, that we can't be superheroes. We can't do it all on our own. So the second film, I made sure to get more people involved to get a bigger team. Maybe sometimes it's hard to manage a bigger team, but obviously it helped a lot for our sanity mainly.
Maybe you got a bit more sleep on the second movie.
Yes, on the second one we did, yes.
Cool. So let me ask you this. You mentioned bigger productions, features. If you had an unlimited budget, what kind of a film would you make? I mean, don't give away the golden goose if you've got your great idea, but what do you have a sort of an idea of what kind of production you'd want, what kind of story you'd want to tell?
I mean, as you said in the introduction, my directors, my favorite directors are Tim Burton, Guillermo del Toro. I mean, those are the films that I love. So the fantasy genre, especially the darker fantasy genre, would be something I'd go for sure.
Something in that
yes,
same
yes,
area,
yes.
Right?
But as a topic or a theme, obviously I prefer when there's something like really individual, like we're talking about an individual character and his or her journey in life. So if I'm talking about my favorite film, for example, then it's the journey of that particular person with his or her oddities in front of the oddities of society, and it would be a more intimate account of a person's life rather than something like Titanic or something like
right.
that, you know, where
right.
there's like the story of a whole population or a whole group of people. I would be more focused on one person's journey.
Right, so sort of an intimate character study told as a dark fantasy.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Cool, so you mentioned some of your favourite directors. Do you have a film in this genre that you're particularly fond of that you want to mention?
Well, when I mentioned Tim Burton, I would say my favourite film would be Edward Scissorhands.
Hello? Why are you hiding back there? You don't have to hide from me. I'm as harmless as cherry pie. Those are your hands? Here I am. I think you should just come home with me.
Joyce, I just saw this strange guy driving with Peg.
Did you get a good look at it?
Hi!
Edward Scissorhands. So, what did you love so much about this movie, Shirley?
The production design of it, for example, is amazing. Like the Gothic and the artificiality of the society that he lives in, how that comes out from the architecture, the production design. It's even the colors. Yeah, I think that's what I mean. Then the music. I think it's a whole package really, which brings it together.
Something that Tim Burton's really known for, I think, is these very all-encompassing, very well-produced, beautiful-looking films.
Yes, and it's quirky as well. I mean, that's the word.
Very. That's very quirky. Okay, that's fantastic. Well, Shirley, thank you so much. Is there somewhere people can go if they want to find out a little bit more about your work?
Yes, my production house is called Motion Blur, so we have the website is motionblur.com.mt. There's obviously Facebook and YouTube, so they can see our work there. Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, and we hope to be seeing more of your work on the big screen very soon.
I hope so. Thank you very much for having me.
Now then, what about fantasy movies that were shot here in Malta? Well, curiously enough, the fantasy genre has been very popular with filmmakers here coming from overseas over the years. Recently we had 2016's Assassin's Creed, and back in 2003, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was partly filmed here, starring the late great Sean Connery, and it turns out that was actually his last feature film role. But going back even further, we have several classic fantasies that set up shop here in Malta. Clash of the Titans in 1981 made arguably the most famous use of Gozo's azure window, still very much standing back then, of course. And the year before, in 1980, Popeye, starring Robin Williams, directed by Robert Altman. And to this day, tourists still visit Popeye Village in the north of Malta to explore the preserved film set cum theme park. In the decade before that, 1977, we had Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, and The Golden Voyage of Sinbad was released 3 years earlier, in 1974. Now, these two Sinbad movies, along with Clash of the Titans, featured the pioneering special effects animation work of one Ray Harryhausen. His name is a legend in Hollywood post-production circles. Harryhausen pioneered progress in the technique of stop-motion animation. Basically, models are shot in miniature of a monster or creature. And it's a case of taking a photo of a single frame of the model, or sometimes two frames at a time if the animation is being shot on twos, to use the industry lingo. Then the physical model is moved by a tiny fractional amount, and a new photo is taken of the next frame, or pair of frames. Then all those still photos are later played back in real time at 24 frames per second, and we get the magical fluid animation on the film print itself. Well, clearly, this was a very painstaking process, but it had a certain organic feel that you might agree tends to be lacking in some of the computer-generated animation we see in more modern movies. And Ray Harryhausen's films are among the most famous examples of stop-motion creature effects before that modern era of computer-aided animation began to take hold.
It is time for chance to intervene. Time you saw something of the world, Perseus. Time you came face to face with fear. Time to know the terrors of the dark and look on death. Time your eyes were opened to grim reality. Far to the east, across the sea, in Joppa.
But enough of mythical Greek monsters and Levantine pirates swanning about our islands. Now let's venture beyond Malta to discover some special fantasy movies twixt the light and the dark. Well, in recent years, the fantasy genre in cinema has really been dominated by several enormous franchises. A few that immediately spring to mind: Star Wars, Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings and Hobbit trilogies, Gore Verbinski's trio of Pirates of the Caribbean films. There's the Harry Potter series, and of course, several entire superhero franchises of their own, from both the DC Comics and Marvel universes. These are the modern-day mythologies of our era. Well, Star Wars is one of my favourite series of movies of all time, and all these franchises really, whilst they often yield very good fantasy movies, they're all just so well known already. I mean, I'm quite sure that you as listener will have already heard of most, if not all of them. So in the remainder of our show here, let's venture off the beaten track just a little bit, shall we? We're going to step back in time to uncover some powerful fantasy movies you might be a little less familiar with. Our first film today is from all the way back in 1946, and it's Frank Capra's legendary classic, It's a Wonderful Life. And right off the bat, you might not think of this one as a fantasy, right? Well, a desperately frustrated businessman is visited by an angel sent from heaven who shows him what life would have been like if he had never existed.
It would have been better if I'd never been born at all.
What'd you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
You've got your wish. You've never been born. A chance to see what the world would be like without you.
Our more mature listeners will doubtless be very familiar with this timeless film already. I mention it today, though, in the hope that some of our younger listeners' ears might prick up. Yes, this is a very old movie. I do worry that many, many old films tend to be simply overlooked by younger viewers today because they feel so very dated. The viewing experience is just so different from watching a modern production. Consider this one, though, mine erstwhile youthful listeners. The film has, of course, been digitally remastered and restored. There's even been a 4K version released recently. So, although it's in black and white, watch this from a high-quality Blu-ray or better, and that on your biggest LED screen, then marvel at the crispness of a picture that's now almost 80 years old. It's hard to believe, really. And during my time in Los Angeles, I built digital film restoration tools for a Hollywood studio. And I've had the privilege of working with some of the best restoration experts in the business. So I know what painstaking work was done to get a 1946 film looking this wonderful. Yes, yes, I said it on purpose. Well, our protagonist here is played by the timeless Jimmy Stewart, surely one of the greatest actors ever to grace the silver screen, with a filmography spanning classic Hitchcock films like Rear Window, right through to genre-bucking westerns such as Destry Rides Again, alongside Marlene Dietrich. Jimmy Stewart's dramatic presence is just so compelling. His is a model of fine acting indeed. And here in It's a Wonderful Life, we see a performance from Stewart that absolutely runs the gamut from joy to complete destitution and all the way back again. Now, this story bears more than a passing resemblance to Charles Dickens' classic A Christmas Carol, and of course that's no accident, but the adventure our protagonist experiences here has been seared into Hollywood's neurons forever. We even see homage being paid in films like Robert Zemeckis' thrilling 1985 adventure Back to the Future. Witness Marty McFly's traumatic arrival in the 30 years earlier version of his hometown of Hill Valley. Parallel his sense of ever-increasing dread with that of Jimmy Stewart's character George Bailey when he returns to a version of his own hometown in which he had never been born. It's a Wonderful Life plumbs some very somber and murky depths in philosophical terms. But despite that, it's peppered throughout with wonderful character moments and a great deal of comedy, both physical and situational. Thematically, the film deals with the death of hope, broken dreams, greed and despair, as well as the innate goodness of the people in the community. This is simply a must-see fantasy for anyone who hasn't watched it yet. Highly recommended.
Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. You really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it away?
Get me back! I don't care what happens to me! I want to live again! Merry Christmas!
Happy New Year to you!
Okay, let's move forward in time now. And well, it has to be said that the 1970s and 80s, in my view, were really the absolute heyday for original fantasy properties at the box office. Earlier, we already mentioned several notable fantasy films shot here in Malta during that time period. And from 1984, our next fantasy film is Wolfgang Petersen's family fantasy, The Neverending Story. Shirley already mentioned it as the film that really gave birth to her love of film. Bastian is a bullied, victimized schoolboy who one day borrows a mysterious old tome from a cranky bookseller. Locking himself in the school attic after hours, he opens the book to be plunged into a wondrous fantasy world where time is rapidly running out.
Now, Bastian, you're old enough to get your head down out of the clouds and start keeping both feet on the ground, right?
Okay.
This book is not for you.
Why?
The never-ending story spawned various spin-off video games, sequels, and industry buzz, even though at the time it received somewhat mixed reviews. I'm not sure why reception was lukewarm, though. This really was pioneering filmmaking in the fantasy genre, and I still think it stands out as one of Wolfgang Peterson's strongest movies. Told through the dual eyes of the young boy reading the book and a protagonist inside the fantasy realm itself, you'll be amazed at how dark this story gets, despite being peppered with a delightful array of kid-friendly creatures and characters. A mysterious nothing is sweeping the land of Fantasia, leaving a vast emptiness in its wake after devouring everything that crosses its path. I mean, come on, folks. Existentially, it doesn't get a lot darker than that now, does it? And this is a kid's movie, for goodness sake. My nephew recently watched this film with us on a lazy family afternoon. To be sure, he was suitably rapt by the story, despite its age. Indeed, you'll see shades of the never-ending story in many modern fantasy films from the 90s and into the 2000s and beyond. But adults and kids alike should really consider visiting this very moving and sweet fantasy film that truly is a flight of fancy. The film also features a delightful soundtrack and a theme song that some of you might recognize. Well, to be honest, I really struggled to pick a single 1980s fantasy film to talk about today. There are just so many great choices from that period. So here are just a few other standout films from that decade. 1981 brought us the classic John Borman film Excalibur, a swashbuckling medieval tale of King Arthur, the Lady of the Lake, and the legendary sword, featuring an amazing soundtrack from Wagner and a star-studded British cast. Also that year was Terry Gilliam's wacky but engrossing Time Bandits, about a gaggle of dwarfs accompanying a young boy as they time travel between many strange lands and eras. On to 1982, and we have The Beastmaster, as well as Jim Henson's disturbing but lyrical puppet animation fantasy The Dark Crystal. This has actually recently been remade as a series over on Netflix. 1983 brought us Ralph Bakshi's beautiful animated box office bomb, Fire and Ice. This is an almost forgotten movie by now, alongside Bakshi's similarly ill-fated Lord of the Rings animated feature film from a few years earlier. Still in 1983, we have Krull, a deliciously dated but surprisingly effective B-movie fantasy that's very dear to mine own heart. Like The Beastmaster, I have fond memories of watching Krull at a Birmingham Cineplex way back when it was released in movie theatres. And still, the list of great 80s fantasy movies is really far longer than I have time for today, but I do recommend all the titles just mentioned. Finally then, for today, we move on to a more modern movie, and it's Francis Lawrence's 2005 fantasy horror Constantine. In the eponymous role, Keanu Reeves portrays an expert in demonology and the supernatural. He helps a traumatized policewoman investigate an ominous death in her family.
Welcome to my life. As long as I can remember, I could see things. Things humans aren't supposed to see. Things you shouldn't have to see.
Into the light I command thee.
I've chosen this film today primarily because of the imagery and mood that the director creates. Lawrence has a background in music videos and commercials prior to moving into film. And amazingly, this is the first feature film he ever directed. 2 years later, Lawrence went on to direct the hauntingly desolate Will Smith movie I Am Legend, itself the third film to be adapted from Richard Matheson's classic 1950s novel. Now, as a director, Lawrence imbues his films with a very strong visual aesthetic, and that's on full display in both of these movies. Back to Constantine then, and well, we've talked about Dante-esque imagery in previous episodes of the show. If you didn't hear episode 3, where we talked about the British creep fest The Descent, then you might want to check that out on our podcast page. And here again in Constantine, Lawrence evokes a powerful vision of angels and demons, the underworld, and purgatorial hell. The computer-generated effects here hold up surprisingly well for a feature that's already nearly two decades old. I have to admit, I haven't been a fan of many Rachel Weisz performances, but she's on top form here in Constantine. It's probably her most sincere and understated role, in my view. She plays a haunted detective, devastated by the recent loss of her sister. And sparring alongside Reeves, we get a sincere character backdrop of two lost souls taking a dark fantasy journey together. To be fair, not all elements in the film work. The final act in particular features a performance by the much-loved, but for me often miscast, Tilda Swinton, also appearing as the always watchable Peter Stormare. But these elements in the denouement didn't quite jibe with the overall tone of the movie for me. Nonetheless, this is a notable recent entry in the fantasy canon, particularly in visual terms. Thematically, the story sincerely takes on the serious subjects of loss, self-sacrifice, and eternal damnation. It blends them with fun fantasy elements from the DC comic book on which the film is based. So film fans seeking a convincing modern rendition of the biblical end of days should probably take a look, and that right sooneth.
Close your eyes, and whatever happens, don't look.
What were those things?
Scavengers of the Damned.
It's impossible.
Yeah, and I don't think they were after me.
So, what did you think of the movie selection in our show? Did we make you think of some worthy fantasy movies twixt the light and the dark? Did the suggestions today convince you to seek out and watch one of the films that's been mentioned? If so, we'd love to know what you thought of it. For all that, and any other feedback, suggestions, and questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A big thank you to our guest, Shirley Spiteri-Mintoff, for joining us today, and also, of course, to our wizard of a sound engineer, Jordi De Bono. The intro music was creepy comedy, and the outro is inspiring teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io. The clips are licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week here on More Than a Movie, when we'll be exploring classic musicals to break your hearts.